Up next, we've got Matt McFarland and Amanda Hahn with Keystone CPA. Welcome, guys.
Good morning. Good morning. How's everybody doing? Thank you for joining us. Thank you to the Norse Group for putting on this great event. As Aaron said, it's been, I think, 8 years now. So I'm Matt McFarland. This is my wife, Amanda Hahn. We have our own business, Keystone CPA, where probably 85-90% of our clients are real estate investors to some extent, whether it's, you know, W-2 job, do it on the side, versus full-time investor. So it kind of runs the gamut. So we wanted to kind of touch on the first part of the morning and our part, just to kind of touch on tax updates from the bill that was passed late last year and kind of how it's going to impact 2018. And we can also take some questions. And then obviously there'll be lots of time later on for more questions. So, all right, so first pop quiz question. What is the name of the latest tax change? The Tax Reform Act of 2018? The Tax Cut and Jobs Act of 2017, the Tax Reduction and Reconciliation Act of 2018, or the Biggest Tax Cut Anyone Has Ever Seen Act?
Please raise your hand. This gentleman back here. This gentleman right here.
B is
correct.
B is correct, yes. The Tax Cut and Jobs Act of 2017. So, yeah, I don't know, you know, obviously where they come up with these names, nobody ever knows, obviously, but...
And I know I don't know if you guys knew, but one of the proposed names for the tax cut was going to be the Tax Cut Act. How many of you guys heard that before? This is a true story. I didn't make that up.
Okay, so here's a quick slide. Can you maybe move over a little bit? So, just a quick slide of tax rates now under the new bill. The single brackets are on the left. Obviously, married is on the right. Essentially, the brackets, they've kind of, overall, they've lowered the rates. They've kept 7 brackets, as you can see. They've also kind of done away with a lot with the marriage penalty. There used to be a marriage penalty where it wasn't, you know, equated equally for single versus married people. So now, you know, now to get to the top tax rate as a married couple, you have to have over $600,000 of income. Before, it was like $400,000 of income. So, you know, you may, if you go and look at your own, compare last year, you know, 17 to 18 rates, you may see, you know, your rates might have gone down 3 or 4% depending on your income. The other thing to keep in mind here is that, kind of hard to see maybe the colors, but the bottom two here are a very light shade of blue, and then the middle, and then the dark blue. Those relate to capital gains rates. So the capital gains rates themselves have not changed. So it's possible that if you have some income in the two lowest brackets, some of your capital gains might be taxed at 0%. And then if your income falls in that kind of that middle area, you get, you know, a lot of your capital gains will be at 15%, and then some, if you're on the top, might be at 20%. So those, the actual numbers related to the capital gains brackets don't coincide exactly with the income brackets, but it's pretty darn close. So, yes.
Is there still a long-term and a short-term capital gain?
There is still a long-term and short-term. So these are the long-term capital gains rates. Short-term is still taxed at ordinary income rates. Okay, so one of the changes we want to mention was in regards to the tax bill was the mortgage interest and HELOC, and how do we maximize our interest deductions going forward? And right now we're talking about your primary residence, okay? So keep that in mind. So good news is for those of you who didn't take out any new loans in 2018, nothing has changed for you, okay? But if you are going to take out a new loan on your primary residence, you can deduct interest up to a loan balance of $750,000 only. Before it was like $1 million. So just keep in mind. But again, if you haven't changed your loan on your primary residence, you have $1 million loan from 3 years ago, you can still deduct the interest on the whole $1 million.
And the other change is that starting in 2018, you probably already know, HELOCs are no longer tax deductible for primary homes for the most part. The main thing that Matt touched on, we want to make sure everybody's clear on, is that these new limitations only apply to primary homes. So for those of you who are landlords, you invest in rental properties, flipping properties, the interest and HELOC on those are not limited at all. Okay, so they're still fully deductible against the rental income, regardless of what the loan dollar amount is.
Let's take questions at the end just for make it easy for Aaron and getting everything on the recording, if that's okay. All right, another pop quiz question. So under tax reform, which of the following is true? A, entertainment is no longer tax deductible. B, meals are no longer tax deductible. C, meals and entertainment are both no longer tax deductible. Or D, only meals paid when eating with your CPA are tax deductible.
This gentleman right here? Entertainment is no longer tax deductible. That's great.
Yeah, so what that means is that if you wanted to take your CPA to game 4 or 5 of the World Series, you may not be able to deduct the cost of the tickets, but you could probably deduct the cost of the meals while we're at the game, though. So just keep that in mind.
So one of the things, the IRS just came out with this, I think it's a week or two ago. So they said, what if, yeah, like in Matt's example, if meals and entertainment occur at the same time, what do? The best way to deduct it is to have it separately invoiced or separately listed on the invoice, okay? So that's how you could still maintain it, because we are getting this question a lot. When you're entertaining your clients or your investors, you're providing food and beverage. So make sure that those are separately listed and you're still good to go on those deductions.
Okay? And if there's ever a question of, you know, that you guys live in a great state of California, California doesn't want to conform to anything that the federal came out with. So where entertainment is no longer tax deductible for federal purposes, it actually is for California. So this is why you pay us the big bucks to keep track of all these differences, right? So, or that's why we pay software big bucks so that they can keep track of it.
I mean, for, you know, 99% of the time, California has more strict rules than the IRS. When the IRS gives us tax benefits, California takes it away. This is one of those very rare instances where the IRS took it away, but California's still allowing us to do it. So one reason to not move out of California, Bruce.
We don't make this stuff up, I promise. All right, Section 199A deduction. So how many of you guys have heard of the flow-through entity tax break? Got a lot of press. It is probably, in my opinion, the best thing that came out of the tax bill. Essentially what this means is that if you have the right type of income and the right type of business, that you may be able to take 20% of the income from that business to be tax-free. So if you made $100 in that business, you may only have to pay tax on $80 of that $100. Sounds good, right?
I think one of the most common questions we've received this year is whether I need to have a legal entity to take advantage of this tax break. And I think the confusion comes from the media that's referring to it as entity tax break, flow-through entity tax break, business tax break. But the reality is you don't have to have a legal entity in order to take this tax break. It certainly could be available if you have an LLC or a partnership or an S corporation, but that's not a requirement in order for someone to get this tax benefit. Okay, so that's probably one of the number one questions that we receive a lot. Clients calling in saying, gosh, do I need to run out and form an entity because I want to take advantage of this, okay?
Right.
So let's go over some examples. Since, you know, everyone here is real estate investors, we wanted to focus today on real estate and the different types of real estate income that someone might be making, and to see which one of these qualify for the 20% tax-free treatment and which ones do not. Okay, so we'll start off with the first one. How many, you know, who thinks that rental income is eligible for first 20% to be tax-free? Well, not that many people. It actually is. Rental income actually is available. Oh, I'm sorry, real estate commissions that is eligible for the tax break. Yeah.
Yeah, so the answer is yes, actually. So one of the, and this is no joke, they came out with the, you know, when they pass a law, they come out with, eventually they come out with what they call regulations to explain the law in detail. The regulations are over like 200 pages just for this stuff. So, but in buried in there, one of the exceptions to people qualifying for this is if you have a service-related business. So what is a service-related business? Well, accountants, we may not be able to qualify for this benefit. Lawyers may not be able to qualify.
If you have higher income.
If you have higher income, yes. And there's income thresholds as well. One of the things on there is a very broad scope consulting. Well, what is consulting? So we thought all along that real estate agents and brokers were going to fall into the service business and may not be able to take it. But actually, they came out within the last 2 months and said that real estate agents and brokers can qualify to take the benefit.
Yeah. And if we have realtors in here, you guys probably know the National Association of Realtors came out and said, yeah, we believe we are not eligible for this. So it was a very welcome surprise when the details came out that said, actually, no, realtors are eligible. They're not considered a service provider. Okay. We'll take all the questions towards the end for Mike, because I don't know where Aaron is.
Yeah, so rental income. So the thing with rental income, obviously, it's kind of the, I'll say it's a gray area. And the reason being is it comes down to what the IRS defines as what is a business. So if you have one rental property, do you have a business? Are you in the business of a rental property? Do you have, if you have five, is that a clear-cut test? Unfortunately, there is no clear-cut answer. So on rental income, you're going to really need to work with your advisor to kind of understand the pros and cons and what, you know, and whether you're comfortable taking the position that, you know, rental income qualifies. For us, there's a lot of case law going both directions. So there's case law saying that one rental property is a trader business. There's some that say it's not. So it kind of depends on, you know, your situation. But keep in mind, obviously, with the pass-through tax break, this is going to apply if you have positive income from your business. So obviously, with rental properties, one of our goals for our clients is to get their rental income on paper at least down to zero with depreciation and other tax strategies. So
And just so you guys know, we will go into more detail in the panel part of this in terms of, you know, which income qualifies and which income doesn't. So we'll go through the rest of these real quick here. Interest income is actually not eligible for the 20% tax break. So that impacts those of us who are trustee investors, hard money lenders, okay, or even if you just get interest income from the bank, that income is not eligible for the first 20% to be tax-free, okay?
Capital gains income also, unfortunately, doesn't qualify for the pass-through, the 20% tax break. Flip profit.
What do you guys think? Flip profit, yes? Yes, it is eligible. Why? Because it's active earned income, okay? Wholesale income, yes, also potentially eligible for the tax break. Property management, another active income that a lot of real estate investors get. So great, that also qualifies, 20% tax-free. Syndication, for those of you who are syndicating, you might be getting paid acquisition fees, disposition fees, you know, managing the deal. Those are all potentially eligible for the flow-through entity or 20% tax-free income as well. The items that do not qualify, just so you know that, you know, most people, a lot of people have, W-2 income. And then, unfortunately, retirement distribution income from Karin's self-directed IRA, that is not eligible for the first 20% to be tax-free.
Especially if it's coming from her IRA. I mean, that's not your money. Huh?
Yeah. Karin just pays tax on everything.
Okay, another pop quiz. Make sure we're paying attention. In order to receive the 199A tax-free income, I must operate my real estate business in an LLC, flip properties in a C-Corp, earn qualifying income as defined by the IRS, or do you claim real estate professional status on my taxes?
Gentleman right here. Yes. Good job. Wow, this crowd is great. Everybody got their answers right immediately. I have to make the quizzes harder next time.
So, yeah, as we mentioned earlier, you don't actually need to have an entity. But one entity that doesn't qualify for the break is actually C Corporation. So keep that in mind if you, you know, talk to your advisor about that if that's your situation.
Yeah, because I know there's a lot of buzz around, you know, C corporations now being taxed at 21% and how great it is. Before you rush out to form a C corporation, make sure you talk with your tax advisor because C corporations are still subject to double taxation, and it is the only type of entity that is not eligible for the 20% tax-free treatment, okay?
Okay, some depreciation-related things to take note of as a result of the tax reform bill. A lot of cool things out there. Now, bonus depreciation, a lot of you may be familiar with bonus or the term bonus depreciation, where before you could write off 50% of your assets or sometime like years ago, 100% of your assets. But before, it had to be on brand new assets. Now they've changed it. It can be new or used assets. So you can buy, you know, if you're buying used equipment or used vehicle for that matter, there's still opportunity to take big tax deductions with respect to your fixed assets. Some of the other changes, Section 179 is another way to accelerate deductions for depreciation. They've made it easier to take that on rental properties now, and they've also made it be able to take it on non-residential commercial properties. So if you have a commercial property, some examples might be before you replace the HVAC system, before you had to depreciate that over 39 years because it was a commercial property, now you can actually expense that right away. So HVAC, fire protection, roofs is another big one on these commercial properties. So if you replace the entire roof on a commercial property, and commercial meaning non-residential, obviously, so office building, strip center, something like that.
Yeah, and these accelerated depreciation on the tax side, you know, what we're seeing is that it's been really helpful for those investors doing short-term rentals, Airbnbs, where you're furnishing a lot of these. So now, you know, before if you bought used furniture to furnish your Airbnbs, it was not eligible for the bonus depreciation. Now it is. Also another big one, you know, now that it's 100% for cars. So cars used majority for businesses, there are certain instances where you can write off, you know, if you bought a Tesla for I don't know how much Teslas cost, but you know, let's say it's $100,000. It's possible to write off $100,000 in the year of purchase on the tax return. Okay, so very, very powerful.
Go back there. Okay, we're going to go into this a little bit more, I think, later as well, but I just wanted to kind of, this is another big opportunity that came out of the tax reform bill. Opportunity zone is a term, tax term for economic development areas where the government is trying to incentivize you to invest in these development areas. And by doing so, what, you know, and Bill may talk about this as well, one of the vehicles before when you sell a rental property, you want to defer the gain on the taxes, right, is do a 1031 exchange, right? Well, this is another strategy that's available to you where you can sell rental property, you can actually sell stocks. You have gains from the sale of this portfolio that if you reinvest your gains into one of these qualified opportunity zone areas and investments, you can defer the taxes on the gain on your taxes from the stock portfolio or your rental property. The cool thing, the big difference in my eyes with the 1031 versus the opportunity zone, 1031, you have to reinvest all of your proceeds. So not just your gain. With the opportunity zone, you could sell something for $500,000, but your gain was only $100,000. You only have to reinvest $100,000 into the opportunity zone to defer your taxes. So these, you know, again, this is absolutely brand new within the last 12 months. They're coming out with new things about it. There's, I think there's some stuff in the materials that have a lot about, you know, what areas qualify. There's a lot of information there.
Yeah, I mean, one of the main things to understand is in terms of the opportunity zone, it must be reinvested into a qualified fund. And fund is defined as an entity where at least 90% of the properties are owned in the opportunity zone. So it is important to have a legal entity, an LLC, a partnership, an S corporation. It cannot be invested in your personal name. Okay, so if you own rentals in Memphis in an LLC and you're doing this, you want to make sure you open a new entity for your opportunity zone properties so you get the eligible tax deferral. Very important, if you find out a property you're looking at is in the O-Zone is the short cool name that we call it. If you're finding out that your property is in the O-Zone, contact your CPA right away before you purchase the property. Okay.
And it's similar to a 1031 exchange too, with it, where you have to buy the investment within 180 days after selling your old investment. Same thing with the opportunity zone. You have 180 days to reinvest your gain to, you know, basically utilize the opportunity. So
yeah. And just one real quick thing to mention, if you're someone who's buying the property yourself, that's fine. You can also invest in funds. There are a lot of funds or syndications set up where you're one of 100 investors that invest in, you know, a large apartment or development deal in the O-Zone as well. Okay, so different ways to look into tax deferral. The question is, do you need an accommodator to do this? No. So far, IRS has not said that you need an accommodator to do this.
As crazy as this sounds, you know, you have to, as Amanda said, you have to invest in one of these qualified funds. Now, how do you become a qualified fund? Believe it or not, it's a self-certification process.
So you just say, hey, I'm self-certified.
Your head, you know? Yeah. Say, I'm qualified for this, but. So I don't know how much time we have left, Aaron.
I think you're right on the button. So Okay. Maybe one question?
Sure.
Okay, let me make sure I get up there. Hang on.
I looked into the opportunity zones in detail this year. Not surprisingly, there's very few of them in California because they do have to look like that. the other caveat that I found was difficult for me to pursue it was that there is a time period in which you have to complete everything, and I think it's within 3 years. Taking the money and moving it over, but you have to match it with extra cash to actually improve the property that you buy within that period, or else all bets are off.
Yeah, that's correct. So even today, we don't have all the details about Opportunity Zone. You know, questions are like, well, what if I buy a property now and then I sell stock later, right? Is there there's reverse 1031 exchange. Is there a reverse O-Zone strategy? So there's a lot of, you know, things that haven't come out. But yes, one of the criteria is that the asset you buy, again, whether you buy it or it's part of a fund, it is the underlying theme is that you are improving on the property. Okay, and again, like Matt said, this is a revitalization effort that the government is saying, okay, we'll give you this incentive to try and help us revitalize these neighborhoods, right? It's not going to be in Laguna Beach or, you know, any of the Orange County, probably.
Yeah.
I will. Actually, the IRS called me this week. I called them last week, and I forgot that I called them. And the IRS called me, and it's a good thing I did not lay on the attitude, because I immediately go into pranksters up mode when somebody says they're from the IRS. She did. She called me back.
Did she ask for your Social Security?
Yeah, exactly. Inside the handout, it is one page off. I'm sorry. I deleted a page up front, of course, and so everything's one page off. But one of the things she sent, there were some updates to the regulation ruling. So it's in your pamphlet. I will also email out links when I send out the survey next week with all the updates, but it is going to be changing again. So there's several hearings, and it's going to change a little bit in 2019. So thank you, guys.
Thank you.